potentially solving a cold case should never be a sad or depressing event.
This is the Veritas 7 True Crime Podcast with your host, Kurt Dillon.
This podcast is like nothing else out there. It's true crime, but we don't present that in a sad or morose kind of manner.
The Veritas 7 features the most interactive and immersive true crime podcasting experience ever imagined.
Our whole goal is engagement with our audience. That's before, during, and after we record each episode. The whole purpose of this show is to actually try and solve these crimes, and we use real police documents to do that.
Don't forget to like and subscribe, so you'll know right away when each new episode goes live.
This is the only true crime podcast I know of where the audience can actually help solve the crime. We are all about trying to solve these crimes. Our whole team is dedicated to uncovering the truth. That's where the name Veritas comes from.
Let's get into the action. Take it away, Kurt.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me, your host, Kurt Dillon, today for this, another exciting episode of the Veritas 7 True Crime Podcast. Tonight, my co-hosts and I are going to go over the incredibly odd case of Celia Beth Van Zanten. Some of you may have heard of her, some of you may not have. It happened in Anchorage, Alaska, 1971. A beautiful young girl left her house ostensibly to go to the local convenience store 3 blocks away and just get some soda before she started babysitting for one of her friends. And she never made it to the store and was never seen or heard from again. Her body was found a couple of days later where she had been tied up and abused. And ironically, in this case, she was not actually killed by her attacker, but died of exposure to the elements after she got away from her attacker. So we will go through all of the details in this case and the intriguing circumstances around her disappearance, around the people in her family and her friends, and also the insane fact that there were multiple serial killers in that remote city in Alaska at that same time that were working when Celia went away. So a lot of suspects in this case, a lot of interesting things to go over. We are going to get that to you right as soon as we come back from this commercial message, because Veritas means truth, and the truth starts now.
I can't believe the price of dog food is getting outrageous. And if I want to save a few bucks, I have to carry a 50-pound bag of kibble up the stairs into my apartment. There has to be a better way.
There is. I'm so glad you said something. You poor thing, we've been using TummyTimePetSupplies.com for over a year now.
Tummy Time Pet Supplies? What's that?
TummyTimePetSupplies.com. They have all the major brands and most smaller brands as well. In fact, we not only get all of our dog and cat supplies there, but they also have everything we need for Brett's chinchilla, Ashley's ferrets, Haley's iguana, and even Jordan's pet tarantula.
Wow, they sell all that?
And more. But what's best about TummyTimePetSupplies.com is that they ship everything through Amazon Fulfillment. That means that everything you order gets delivered right to your door, and if you're an Amazon Prime customer, shipping is almost always free.
That really sounds incredible, but I bet it's super expensive. Mark just got laid off and I can't afford all those special conveniences for a while.
Nonsense. In fact, TummyTime offers some of the most reasonable prices anywhere. You really have to be a whiz and coupon shopping to beat their everyday prices, and when they run sales, forget about it.
I can't believe it, an incredible selection, great prices, and right to your door service. So what do you think?
I think the next time I buy anything for my pets, I'm going to TummyTimePetSupplies.com.
I think that's a very wise choice.
Me too.
That's right. For all your pet needs, it's TummyTimePetSupplies.com. Remember TummyTimePetSupplies.com.
So, this case is really, really interesting for a lot of reasons. One thing I found in the research of this case, which I'm sure a lot of you found also, is that everybody has an opinion and none of them match, except for the fact that there are a whole bunch of sites that really, really, really want to believe that the butcher baker is the one that killed Beth Van Zanten. Whether he did or whether he didn't, we're going to delve into that a little bit more as we go on. First, I'm going to ask co-host Paige, Paige, I know you did a lot of investigation into this. Tell me, what's your gut impression you're getting on this?
Ooh, it's a hard one. I've been doing a lot of research and a lot of things are telling me a lot of different things. I think I am leaning towards the butcher baker, but I also do want to take a deep dive into Greg.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, he's if the reports are even close to true, the amount that his story has changed, the fact that Elise there, his friend or his girlfriend or whatever you want to call her, the fact that she admitted that they were together for 3 hours when she initially spoke to the police and then went back afterwards and changed her story and said that he came pounding on the door telling her that she needed to tell the police that they were together nonstop from 9 p.m. to midnight that night. It was definitely a little fishy.
Yeah, that's definitely never a good look.
But then again, you know, you have to ask, was it just because maybe he was doing something shiesty that he didn't want anybody to realize? Or was it because he was killing her and he needed, you know, he was killing Beth and he needed an alibi? Who knows? What about you, Kat? What take are you getting on this case?
I don't know. I must have some obsession with pictures, but I was looking at his pictures and I thought he was kind of squirrely, not a guy you'd be afraid of. So I don't know if that helps or not.
Right. Honestly, both of them look a little squirrely. If you're looking at the butcher baker and you're looking at photos of Greg, I mean, both of them are kind of squirrely.
That's what I was getting. Just, yeah.
And the whole, you know, for Mormons, these people drink an awful lot of alcohol. Did anybody else notice that other than me?
Yes, and they're smoking weed and they're drinking.
Yeah, I mean, they're smoking copious amounts of marijuana and drinking like fish, talking like drunken sailors. And I'm like, what kind of LDS church do you belong to?
What do you think that Greg had the most opportunity, though? Like, they did live in the same house, lived, I guess their bedrooms were next to each other.
It really kind of depends upon whose version of the events of that night you buy.
Well, I heard that there was sexual tension, but then I didn't get that because they're supposedly cousins.
Believe me, it's not historically unheard of to have kissing cousins.
Oh, no, I get that.
I read her and him absolutely loathed each other. They loathed each other their whole lives.
Yeah, I read that too.
But I only read one report that said that. So is that true? But how often in life, especially when you're 18 years old, how often in life did you start a relationship tumultuously with somebody that you couldn't stand and they ended up being like, you might end up being, you know, crushing on them hard for like 6 months or a year after that? It definitely happens like that, where sometimes the best relationships start out with angst and anger.
So I think that this crime, it could either be like one of two ways. So she was abducted on the way to the store, right? So it's possible that this was an opportunistic crime and the killer did not know her. But I also did see that she had this two sides to her. Like, she likes to explore, but she hated strangers. I read that. So I don't really believe she would have willingly got in the car with a stranger. But on the other hand, maybe she did know the person she got in the car with, and they offered her a ride to the convenience store or back or something like that.
Right. Yeah, really weird. And the whole thing that they made on all of the reports that I read, and I haven't gotten any Freedom of Information Act on this yet. I've put in for it, but I haven't gotten anything back yet. So that's why I'm sparse, and we're depending for this information session here where we're debating. We're basically looking at not police reports, but we're looking at what other people, media outlets, and whatever have written about the case. And ironically, everybody wants to throw it in the basket of the butcher baker. But, I mean, I'm just unconvinced. They're basing that almost totally off of the fact that when he drew that map for his plea bargain to take the death penalty off the table, that he put an X where her body was found, or close to where her body was found. That's really the only evidence that ties him to her at all.
There was a resemblance between the abduction of Sandra Patterson.
Yes. Right. And the other victims, like, I really, if you look at, like, the MO and possible motives, it could have definitely been done by the butcher baker, in my opinion. I saw this thing that, like, the butcher baker would, like, get these women in his car, and if, like, they, like, did what he wanted to do, he could let them go. But if they didn't, that's when they were, like, screaming and yelling and putting up a fight. That's when he would kill them, is what I saw on, like, National Geographic or something. So it's possible. So the cause of death was she froze to death, right? I read that correctly. So it's possible that she did somehow escape, but it was just so cold. I read a report she didn't have shoes. I might have misread that.
Well, and see, this is where it starts getting crazy, because the report that I read that she didn't have shoes, now obviously her body didn't have shoes when they recovered it, but I've read reports where there were eyewitnesses that claim they saw her in a bathroom sitting on the floor next to the toilet smoking a cigarette with blue feet because she had frostbite on her feet. There were two girls that claimed that they saw her in the restroom of a rest area off the side of the road, and she looked very unkempt, like she hadn't bathed in days and all this, but she had a green jacket, but it was laying on the floor next to her, and she had no shoes. And they asked her what was wrong, and she said, "My feet are cold because I have no shoes." They asked her if she wanted them to get the manager, and she was like, "No." And she came out of the bathroom and walked away like 15 or 20 minutes later. Like, really, supposed eyewitness reports that make no sense. I'm sorry. If you see a girl like that on the floor of the bathroom, are you asking her if she wants help, or are you just getting her help?
You're getting her help.
You know what I mean? Clearly, I'm not going to ask her if she needs or wants my help. I'm calling somebody, at least the manager of the store, but probably the cops, too.
I don't know if I believe the account of those witnesses. It almost seemed like someone who was trying to claim that they had seen her after the fact, after it became known that she was missing, because I don't think they told anyone, as far as I know, this account until later, and possibly after her clothing was already publicly known, what she'd been wearing that night. This whole account didn't make sense to me, and it didn't seem to be part of her having been abducted in a car. And also keep in mind, this was 1971. A lot of people hitchhiked back then, and I heard and read different scenarios about whether or not she would hitchhike, but that's the one scenario where she may have gotten in someone's car, is if she was just hitching a quick ride somewhere and someone picked her up. I don't know if she was actually hitchhiking, but some sources said that she did often, and then another source said she didn't like to.
Right, and the weird thing about that is, you know, I read the one report that tried to assert that because she was Mormon, she thought that hitchhiking should be illegalized and nobody should ever do it. And I'm like, all right, this is the same person that's got 9 pounds of pot in her house and drinks like a fit, you know what I mean? So clearly their religion was not a real big factor in their lives. That's number one. Clearly they weren't living by the letter of the Book of Mormon, because that's a really big no-no. That's number one. Number two, this convenience store, from all accounts, was like 3 blocks away. So I can understand getting a ride from somebody that you know to go 3 blocks away. But who's going to hitchhike to go 3 blocks? You're going to stand there on the side of the road with your thumb out to go from, you could see 3 blocks away. I mean, you're in visual sight of where you're going.
Yeah, and it doesn't make sense. Like, she would go far away willingly, in my opinion. She had obligations that night. She was supposed to be babysitting like 30 minutes from the time that she left, right? Like, she left at like 8:30, was supposed to babysit at 9.
If you believe, depends upon whose version of the events you believe. The one, she wanted to watch that TV show and intentionally went to go leave during a commercial break. The commercial break was only 2 minutes long. She's going to walk to the store, buy soda, and walk back before the commercial's over?
Just hoping you miss as little as possible.
Maybe that's why she was hitchhiking. Maybe she wanted to get there really quickly.
Unless she's a Wile E. Coyote and strap an Acme rocket to her butt, I don't see how she's going to get there and get back with her soda. And who really in Anchorage, Alaska, in December, who really wants soda that bad?
Well, off the timeline, there were multiple people saying that they saw her between 8:30. Some say 11, 10. I mean, I don't know. It's just weird.
Yeah. And so then you get into the scenario, or the brothers couldn't agree on anything. So I find that weird
as well. Like 2 days later, they're going to report her missing.
Well, I mean, enough mescaline and marijuana will do that to you, though.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I don't think they were covering for anybody. Especially, but clearly afterwards, now the facts that we know is that the brothers and the cousin became estranged
after her body was found and they kicked him out of the house.
I read that too.
There was also the belief that he got kicked out of the house and moved in with Ziegler.
Right. I had read something about they had lived together too. Is it Ziegler or Ziegler?
Ziegler.
I think it's Ziegler.
Now that's a weird coincidence if the two of them shared a house.
Right, because there's your third suspect.
Yes.
Right. Right. And I mean, that opens up the door to all other possibilities too. What if, you know, what if Greg decided one night he was jealous of what his buddy was doing and he decided he wanted to try it for himself?
I think that's something that we could do is try to establish, what do we think the motive is? Does it go with the motive that was like with the butcher baker, which was number one power, number two thrill, number three sex, or something like that? Or is it just the power and sex motive? Or like, what do we think the motive is? I would like to know what you guys think.
That's a great question. Yeah. I feel like, I guess the motive here and the way that it was happening suggested to me that it was one of these two serial killers rather than the cousin who was right in the house with her. There was just something about how the MO seemed more consistent with these two serial killers who were operating in this area both at the same time rather than the cousin, who I think may have been a foster cousin I read. I don't know that they were cousins by blood or not. Just something about it did not ring true to me that he'd be taking her out to this place. I don't know if he had access to a car. I have a lot of questions about the car and the tire tracks. I don't want to jump ahead, but that's something I'd really like to know, is they have these tire tracks in the snow, and I would hope so badly that they could tie those tire tracks to a specific car. And I don't see anything doing that.
They did tie it to that white pickup truck where the off-road tires, it had three tires where the off-road tread came out onto the sidewall, but it had one tire where the tread went in.
Well, that was for Gary Ziegler. That was for another murder. I don't think that it was for this one. And they talked a lot about the tire tracks in a different murder.
Right.
But it wasn't for Beth Van Zanten. And they talked about these donuts in the snow, but it's like, okay, you've got these tire tracks. Are they the same as these other tire tracks? And yeah, I looked into it, but I don't see any results. That was something I'd really like to know.
I think it was because of the weather. They weren't able to get, they weren't able to test it right or something like that.
That's what I read, is that they weren't able to compare. First of all, because of the weather, but second of all, because they were doing donuts, that automatically, because you got high traction, high revolution on the tires, it doesn't really lend itself to leaving a tread pattern in snow, particularly after it's been, blown around by the wind a little bit and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so, and it was the 70s, and they're still using, like, the mold and pour in the tire tracks. They're not having this high technology that we have now with, like, the pictures and, like, the graphic on the digital stuff, you know? So it could have just been inconclusive, like, just because of the methods back then and the weather.
Right. Now, I have another good question here to pose to the group. The other murders that we were talking about, and I know you went over this a little bit, Diane, do you – also, Paige – do you remember reading any of the other Butcher Baker's victims bound in the same way?
Yes.
That Beth was.
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know if like with the exact same material, but in the same manner.
Well, I read that it was the same material as far as the speaker wires.
Beth had speaker wire that her hands were bound with, but there was only one other that I read. There was only one other body that had another kind of speaker wire. It wasn't matching speaker wire, but it was another kind of speaker wire. And that was the guy that was killed with the shotgun blast to the belly and laid out in the middle of the street, not far from where her body was found. That was also speaker wire, but it was not matching speaker wire to the speaker wire Beth had on.
Wow. That was Gary Ziegler, I thought, who was killed that way.
Yeah. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. But his body, he was killed, I think they said something like 50 or 60 feet from where Beth's body was recovered.
Wait, what? I did not see this.
I didn't either.
Ziegler was killed with a shotgun blast to the belly. And his body was displayed in the middle of the street up at the top of that. If you saw that picture in that one article that we looked at, there was a street up there at the top of that ridge. And his body was splayed out in the middle of that street from a gunshot wound to the midsection. And his hands were bound with speaker wire, but they were not, it was not black and white speaker wire like the speaker wire that was on Beth.
Well, from what I understand is that they both Beth and Sandra Patterson, for everything from being undressed, he undressed them and their bras were slashed. They were both were sexually assaulted. They both, what else was it? They're both, their hands were tied. Yeah, everything was the same with both of those women.
Okay.
I mean, one thought, as for the speaker wire, I don't think they ever matched this exact specific type of speaker wire to any of the other crimes. Right. But it's possible that that's all the wire he had. You know, he had a speaker with some wire, and then he used something else to tie up other people. And I know the FBI spent a lot of time trying to track down the speaker wire and where it was bought and purchased and who had had it. And I think they could not figure it out.
The only thing they could figure out is that it originated in Japan. But yeah. they couldn't figure out what stores sold it or who they might have sold it to or when or any of that. So it was really it was a rabbit hole that led to nowhere.
Right. So it made sense to me that he may have only had enough to use on one person. And that doesn't rule out to me that the same serial killer doesn't mean that they're going to use the exact same speaker wire for every murder. They may just have had enough for one and then they use something else for a different crime.
Right. But
with the Butcher Baker, he was committing crimes that very same week, which is partly why I would lean towards him, because he was very active that week. And exactly this time period was between when he had abducted another girl and when he was caught, I guess, is when Beth was murdered.
Right.
Yes. And I'm looking at my notes right now, and it says the Butcher Baker made the girl who got away her strip, and that he slashed her bra with the knife. And I thought that was really interesting because Beth was also cut with a knife in the chest. So I feel like that's just so similar and it can be discounted.
Right.
I agree.
Yeah. And I think you're speaking of the real estate secretary.
We should talk about the FBI profiler and the fact that he thought that the murderer stuttered. And I don't know if that was specific for Beth Van Santen's murder or if it was just for the whole string of murders that was happening, and that this FBI profiler was so on the money when it came to the Butcher Baker. And it also goes to the earlier comment about how a couple of these guys just look so, quote, like squirrely. But that was one of the reasons why the FBI or why police let this guy go, was because when they saw him, they're like, oh, there's no way that he did it. Robert Hansen, he's like way too wimpy. And they didn't believe that young woman who managed to escape out of his plane, handcuffed and naked or half naked, saying this guy tried to kidnap me, he raped me. And the police did not believe it, partly because he looked so wimpy. And so that, it just, you cannot tell by someone's demeanor. You cannot tell by the way they look. And sometimes these guys who look the mildest or act the meekest, they get away with it the longest.
So I did see something on, I think, National Geographic, where they said that he was an established member of the community because he had all that like hunting stuff. He like owned his bakery, and he even went as far to take donuts to the police station on a regular basis, which sort of goes to like that whole like power move. Like, that must have been like thrilling for him. And those are also like the motives for the Butcher Baker's murder. And I just thought that was really interesting.
A lot of these sick people really love to try and taunt the cops. I don't know where the ego thing kicks in to the point where they really think that there's, you know, they're smarter than 100 people coming after them. I can get it if you get some old cop that's investigating you in Podunk, North Dakota, and, you know, he's 2 weeks away from retirement and really doesn't care if he solves the case. I could understand you thinking you might be able to outsmart him. But once they start forming task force on your ass and all this other kind of, I mean, it's just a matter of time at that point.
Oh, right. Yes, definitely.
Right. These guys who draw attention to themselves by writing letters or bringing donuts, it's like, well, wait a minute. Maybe this guy was being a little too friendly. Maybe he was trying to
insert himself into the investigation.
Exactly. Or just knew what he was doing. And it's like that character from Breaking Bad, who was all chummy with the DEA and would host like fundraisers for them. And he was the biggest drug dealer of all.
Yeah. Exactly.
The Rachel Ray of the meth lab. I only use Tapper pots because, you know, they're exclusively Martha Stewart, because only the best for my customers.
So do we really want to go in on the psychology of the Butcher Baker right now?
Well, we can. I don't do profiles because now I'm interested to see what you've got there. I try and stay away from the profiling only because it's been done to death so many times. Now, this was back when profiling was new, so it's a little bit different. It's a little bit fresh. That guy really did have a good take on the Butcher Baker, it seemed.
Yes.
But this case just, it really seems weird to me. I can understand why so many people want to pin this on the Butcher Baker. I just, all of the lies and all of the BS of her family, I can't escape the fact of thinking that they had something to do with it. Maybe it was the Butcher Baker and Greg. Maybe they were buddies and the cops were just never able to put that link together. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I was born 3 months before this happened. But it doesn't strike me as the work of a serial killers don't let their victims go, usually. I'm not saying he let her go, but they're usually good enough. But unless you want to claim, like one of the reporters that I read, you know, said that Beth was his first victim. Well, she wasn't his first victim if she got away. If she got away and then died because she froze to death, you know what I mean? Yeah, she was his victim, but at the same point, he failed epically. Because he let her get away. If they didn't live in Alaska and it wasn't 3 days before Christmas and she was naked running through the snow and whatever the case may be, she'd have lived and he'd have gone to jail for a long time.
Dan, let me ask you a question. So, you know, like that whole thing, it's like, I don't know if I'm quoting this correctly, but it can be like but for and then things can be charged on that. Do you think that this could be charged as a manslaughter if he did indeed like do this to her and that it caused her death ultimately? What do you think?
No, I think this would be higher than manslaughter because what happened here, it sounded like she was running away from the car. She didn't just freeze to death. She fell into a ravine. And so he had brought her out to this location and she was escaping literally with her hands tied with speaker wire behind her back with no shoes on. And she was running away from a car that was doing donuts and hunting her. And she fell into a ravine and died. 100%, this was totally a foreseeable event, and I think that he would be charged with more than just manslaughter.
He would probably be charged with murder, too, because there's no doubt that he facilitated her death. She wouldn't have died that way if it wasn't for his action and his intervention.
Right, I agree that he wouldn't be charged with murder, one. And the thing is, the Butcher Baker did let another woman got away from him. He wasn't that big of a guy, and it was the final one, and that's how he got caught, is because that other woman did manage to get out of the car and run away.
That's true, yeah.
Patterson.
And that's part of what he did with all these women, is he let them run around. He usually would take them to his cabin, but I think he enjoyed having them run frantically while he then hunted them. I mean, it was the just most horrible, horrible thing that he was doing. So in a way, to me, it did seem similar to the other murders.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, her family lied so much that it's like, ultimately, here, one of two things, this is the way I'm feeling. Either her family was involved or they were so twisted on drugs that they're the reason why the Butcher Baker never got pegged with her murder. Because there was just, I mean, there was so much exculpatory evidence. All the defense attorney would have to do is bring their statements and their polygraphs and whatever and introduce them into evidence. And no 12 people on earth would be able to convict the Butcher Baker with all of that exculpatory evidence, especially with the cousin telling Elise to lie and say that he was with her from 9 to midnight. I mean, that's going to taint any jury.
There are also other people corroborating that he was out drinking that night and that he was like showing off his car to other people and that sort of thing.
Greg, there was, but they, like, their timelines were all screwed up. Nobody could definitively say that between like 9:30 and 10 or 10:30 that he was absolutely there at that time. So he could have been there drinking, slipped out. Matter of fact, you could even make the argument that the drinking is the reason why he decided to rape her and kill her. Maybe he heard about the butcher baker doing whatever it was he was doing and decided he was going to copycat it or whatever and just epically fell. I don't know. I'm just putting it out there that you don't usually see, especially family members, you don't see family members lying like that unless they have some culpability.
Also, like, you ask me and my friends at a night out in college to give you a timeline of events that happened, it is not going to match up, and it might change a few days later.
That's true.
And you really have to go back to what I've been saying, motive. Do we really think this was a, like, tiff between cousins crime, or do we think this was somebody who hated women, who liked to hunt them for play, who, like, had this weird sex thing? Like, do what we really have to look at, who would, like, this was an egregious crime. Like, we have to think, is it just a little tiff, or is it this huge MO that correlates with the serial killer?
Right. I mean, I understand everything Kurt's saying. It just seems that if Greg was involved, he would have done it in a different way.
Probably, unless, and I agree too, which is why I said, unless he had some inside knowledge about how the butcher baker was doing it, and he tried to make it look like the butcher baker was doing it.
Right, that's possible.
That's the only thing that I could think of, which would also be why she got away, because he's obviously not very good at it.
Right.
But then again, the butcher baker wasn't very good at it either, so six of one, half a dozen the other.
Right. It's all possible. And that's why no one ever got arrested here. So I've got a question about her babysitting job. So she wasn't reported missing for 2 days, but she was supposed to babysit that night. And so does anyone understand who she was babysitting for? I thought it had something to do with Greg.
It did. She was babysitting for Elise. Whatever relationship they had, they weren't married. She's the one that told the cops that Greg came banging on her door the next day or the day after that, saying, you have to lie for me and you have to tell the cops that we were together from 9 to midnight that day. I don't know exactly what the relationship was. Whatever it was close enough that initially she did lie for him.
Did he say you have to lie for me, or is he just like, make sure that you like let them know that we were together? Did she completely recant that they were together?
Yes, she did. She absolutely did recant that they weren't together the whole time. However, the verbiage that he used when he knocked on her door depends upon the source and which one you believe is more credible. On that one website that we went and looked at, that source very clearly and specifically said that he said, you have to lie for me. On another one of the sources that was written earlier, which... ironically, that second source was plagiarized brutally from the first source, because if you look, the sentence structure is almost identical in like four or five different places. So the one that was written in 2018 was plagiarized mercilessly by the one that was written in 2022. But the first one, which to me just seemed a little bit more credible, that could just be because it had a lot less grammatical errors, but also because the second person clearly copied from it. But in that one, the verbiage that was used to quote Greg when he knocked on the door was much different. Do you remember that we were there, you know, where he was asking her questions rather than implanting the thoughts? Do you remember that we were there from 9 to midnight? That's a very different scenario than you have to tell the cops that we were together from 9 to 12.
Agreed.
Right. You know, however, why didn't the person that she was supposed to babysit for call the brothers and say, hey, Beth never showed up. Is she okay? I just don't understand why that part is missing from this case.
Well, and another thing that's missing is Elise was supposed to be the one to bring the kid to Beth's house with where the brothers lived and where Greg lived also. Elise was she was supposed to babysit there. Remember, at the beginning of the narration part of the story, they claim that they were watching that TV show, that made-for-TV movie, and Beth wanted soda. And she told her brothers, who were high as a kite, when Elise comes with the kid, tell her I'll be right back. Tell her to hang out for a couple minutes. I'll be right back. So she was supposed to babysit the kid there at her own house. So the fact that Elise never brought the kid to the house is also suspicious to me.
Right. I agree with that. I did not realize that that's what was supposed to happen. So Elise already knew that this wasn't going to happen, or somehow they bumped into each other. It's confusing.
But then here's the crazy part. Elise and Greg went bar hopping to all four of those bars there in Anchorage without anybody ever saying, well, who's watching the kid?
I was just thinking
right.
That.
That's a mystery in this case, is who ended up babysitting. Where's the kid, and who?
You had a babysitter set up. Obviously, for whatever reason, you knew that wasn't going to work out. So who, like Ghostbusters, who are you going to call?
Right.
At the last minute. Really strange to me that they went through that whole oratory. That's what I was telling you about this case, Paige, when we were talking earlier in pre-production about the research and all this other kind of stuff. This was such a badly reported case all the way around. The details are horrible. The oratory, the timeline is hideous. There's no way that's factual. I've read enough made up timelines in fictional horror books to know that that timeline is full crap.
Yeah, I also like read that they were running late. So I'm not sure, I guess when you're that age, plans change in the minute. I'm just always going to be a little bit of a devil's advocate to, you know, look at all the perspectives. I know, like, I've been supposed to do things when I was that age, and I ended up doing something completely else and neglecting responsibilities. I'm not perfect, right, but...
No. But you can't neglect a kid.
Yeah.
Not only that,
but even those.
It doesn't help that they were smoking like they just stepped out of a Cheech and Chong movie.
Yeah, everybody in this case was high or drunk or both on that night. And so it's going to be really hard.
Yeah. And you got two brothers living in the same house. Their sister just got murdered and they can't even agree on what they had for supper because of these details. Where Greg was, where Greg wasn't, who Greg was with, where the baby was, how come Elise never brought the... I mean, because of all of these questions, I can absolutely see why the prosecutor would never take this to trial.
Yeah, it's really hard.
I mean, could you see yourself prosecuting this case, Diane?
No, it's one of these cases where it's just like we talked about in one of our last cases. It's so messy. It's where you have a lot of teenagers or early 20-somethings and people are at bars or they're drinking. And like we're saying, they're smoking a lot of pot. No one's keeping track of time. And it's just not clear exactly what happened. People are changing their stories. Their stories don't match up, even if they're trying to tell the truth. And not to mention that there are two serial killers operating simultaneously in the same area, which boggles my mind. It's so horrible when something like this happens, where you have two serial killers and then you suspect both of them or maybe a family member. And that's another crazy part of this case, is that, I mean, how often do you have two serial killers in the same exact area, someplace like Anchorage? It's just really sad.
What's crazy to me is that, didn't you mention that even Beth was downtown drinking with no shoes on?
All of them. Allegedly. And they're all supposed to be Mormons.
She's supposed to be missing. And I guess I didn't understand that part.
They're all high. That. They're all drunk. They're all stoned. Somebody reported that Beth had an abortion the month before. I mean,
what?
Wow. Like I said, what LDS church do you belong to? I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm waiting for, as I'm reading the article, I'm waiting for like the logo for National Lampoon to show up on the bottom. You know what I mean? And be like, ha ha.
Wait. Go back. So she had an abortion.
Allegedly.
Was it Greg's?
That Beth had an abortion, and they believed it was from that Williams guy that was in the military, and he was stationed in Fairbanks at the time of her disappearance. But he was never considered as a viable suspect because his brother and a bunch of other people could verify that he was in Fairbanks, like 1,000 miles away, that night.
Okay.
Right. But it has nothing to do with this specific religion, because a lot of teenagers may grow up in a religious family and they may go back to religion when they're a little bit older, but they may have some wildness to them for a few years when they're teenagers. I don't find that unusual.
Especially in a small town that's lacking in like wholesome extracurriculars per se.
Right. Yeah. Right. It seemed like there wasn't a lot to do and there were a lot of bars.
Exactly. Yeah. Anchorage, Alaska, 1971. You're drinking, you're having sex, or you're sleeping.
Wow. It's just a crazy case. It's confusing. It's weird. Yeah.
Here it is. It was supposedly Beth's older brother friend who was the father if she had the abortion. No, business partner of her brother David.
That's right. Her oldest brother David, his partner in the fly by night garage.
Love the name.
Yeah.
So it's so convoluted. I think that's part of the problem here. There's just too many weird things.
Everything in this story is so messed up, and nobody can remember anything. You can't even rule out the brothers for raping and killing her.
Right. And back in 1971, when you're looking at some of these older cases, again, we don't have the kind of physical evidence or the cell phone evidence. So even today, you may have the same thing where you have a lot of teenagers who are drunk or high and their stories don't agree. But we have the benefit of cell phones now, and we can see exactly where people's cell phones are pinging. And we have all kinds of GPS devices on people's cars. We know exactly where their cars are, and we have surveillance cameras on every corner store. So it's just so much easier to pinpoint where people are, and you don't have to rely as heavily now on witness statements.
Right. Right. And now in this case, too, you have all this stuff about, her personal feelings about dating. They found when her mother was going through her stuff, she found all those diary or letters, love letters or whatever it was. It's so hard to date now. If she was still in love with the military guy or if she was in love with her brother's partner or it was convoluted is the best word for it. Really, you got a lot of really weird things going on in this case. And this poor young girl was really stuck right dead set in the middle of it. I remember when the butcher baker was originally arrested and he was charged with a lot of these murders, he worked out a plea bargain where he was going to take a map and he was going to draw on the map where he left all his bodies, his victims. And I know that on the map, one of the locations was where Beth's body was found. So, Paige, I believe you have what he claimed was his alibi, because he confessed to a whole lot of these murders, but he didn't confess to her, did he?
He did not confess to her this one.
Not explicitly, but it could be argued in the map, I guess.
Right. Well, like I said, there was the fact that he put the X on there, but apparently, too, you said you found he actually had an alibi for this case?
Allegedly. Okay, so he went to work at 4:45 December 2nd, 1971. He got through work at 2 p.m. He went home to this address and spent the rest of the afternoon from 2 to 5 with his wife and sister-in-law and daughter, then left to Larry Bivens on 6th Street for pizza supper. Left there about 10:30, went home with my wife and daughter, went to bed around 11, got up at 4:30, dressed and arrived at work at 4:45 a.m. and worked again until 2. He is alleging that he was having pizza supper from 5 p.m. to 10:30 p.m., which is when the time is in question of the disappearance and murder.
Is that also the one where he underlined 10:30? There was one report where he wrote where he actually underlined 10:30 and like he knew that that was the key time that cops were looking for.
Yeah. I think so.
Right.
10:30 is underlined.
Right.
And when did he come up with this writing, quote, alibi?
Ooh, I don't remember. Well, I think that whenever that girl escaped, she went and reported it, and that's when the connection was made, and maybe that's when he was questioned.
They were telling him, you're going to confess to these or you're going to get the death penalty. They were going to give him the chair. So he agreed to confess and put a mark on the map where he left all the bodies. And then if they found the bodies where he put the mark, they agreed that they would take the death penalty off the table. And they would say,
right, but this would have been months, if not years later, because there were a lot more victims after this. And so that's what I'm wondering. When did he write down this alibi? He's not keeping a diary. It's not like, oh, every night I'm writing down exactly what time I have my pizza supper. So there's just something weird about that whole thing.
Well, not only that, I've never seen anybody take 5.5 hours to eat a pizza.
Yes. And I do think that like the girl that escaped and Beth, this was all in a few days. So they must have been looking at it. And then whenever, so basically the girl escapes the plane whenever he was trying to take her. She identified the plane. They tracked the plane back to him and questioned him. And I'm guessing, like, that's the time when they asked him about this, not when they were taking the death penalty off the table. I think this was separate from when he wrote the X.
Okay. That's really fascinating stuff. Do we think that there is enough here? You know, if we were prosecuting this case, if we were the jury and he was on trial in front of us, do we think there's enough here to convict him for her murder?
I have one more thing to add. So sure. He might not be wanting to fess up to this one. So he did say some quote. It's not verbatim. He said, I only like do this to, quote, bad girls. I would never do this to good women. And we do know that he was targeting prostitutes, right? And so maybe he figured out that she wasn't a prostitute and that he had messed up. And maybe he's like, oh, wait, this isn't like the people who deserve it, quote unquote. So maybe that's why he wouldn't want to confess to this one.
He said, quote, you cannot rape a prostitute. So I agree that he wouldn't admit to doing that to an innocent girl or a non-prostitute.
Good point. Yeah, because in his own mind, he's not guilty of raping anybody.
Exactly.
And
as long as all he raped was prostitutes.
Yes, and he said something in his like confession whenever they were taking the death penalty off the table. He goes, well, I paid for the time. And he thought he could just do whatever he wanted with that time. And I guess that also included murder. But maybe when he found out that this girl was just some, you know, girl in the town, he was like, wait. Maybe, and then he doesn't want to like admit that he actually like might have killed somebody that wasn't a, quote, bad girl.
Right.
Right, in his mind, he thinks, oops, shouldn't have done that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't think, based on what I've read, I don't see proof beyond a reasonable doubt against anyone. I lean towards the butcher baker, but without any kind of physical evidence, tire tracks, DNA, something more specific tying him to her, where you have such a messy timeline. And I don't think that they can place him at the scene and there's no physical evidence. I don't think there's enough. And that's why they never were able to prosecute anyone, which is so sad and terrible, given that this feels like a case that could have been solved at the time.
Right.
Yes, right. I feel like it could.
The comedy of errors with these cops that investigated this is really is mind-boggling.
I definitely feel like it could be solved now. I don't think they had DNA then. And I think it's too late to get it now. But, you know, there was the rape component. So, you know.
Well, you see, that's another thing that even though they didn't have DNA and they couldn't test then like they could now, at the same exact time this was going on, the Alphabet Murders, which is the first case that we covered, the Alphabet Murders were happening in Rochester, New York. In the same time in 1971, the Alphabet Murders actually happened a month before this happened. The first one did. Carmen Colon was killed a month before Beth Van Zanten was. And they were astute enough in 1971 and in 1973 to keep the DNA samples off of those dead little girls, which they're now using familial DNA, and they believe that they're going to be able to isolate the killer here within the next, you know, 6 months or so. They at least knew what DNA was back then, or at least Rochester police did.
But you have to think about the resources available in Rochester versus Anchorage, Alaska.
That's true.
And the education of the police there, and like the access to education of the pool that they're hiring police from.
Yeah, got a good point there, Paige. Not exactly the cream of the crop in the recruit pool.
Yes, definitely not.
But I wonder if any biological samples in this case were saved or preserved. I don't know. You wish that they were, because it just feels like it could have been solved. And even if the tire tracks were doing donuts, I feel like today someone could easily identify those. They didn't just do donuts. They had to have driven to the scene. So I feel like there must have been tire tracks somewhere close by.
Well, right. And like we know now, the tire tracks are awesome in snow.
Right.
I mean, he might as well drive through the cast himself.
Right.
Especially if it's that wet snow.
So I don't know if any photos of the tire tracks still exist or if any biological evidence still exists that this maybe someday could still be solved, because I feel like it should be solved.
It should. And, you know, the funny thing about this case, it was very frustrating, is there none of that is available. When I look, I know where to look. I've been doing this a long time. There's nothing on her autopsy report, because I wanted to know, was she intoxicated? Was she high or was she drunk?
She was high. That's why she went to the convenience store, because she had the munchies and she was really craving.
Well, we assume that, but we don't know. We know that the brothers were smoking. We don't know if she was. We assume that, probably you're right. But what I'm saying is the toxicology report would leave no doubt.
Yes.
And it would also leave no doubt if somebody slipped her a roofie, or somebody, tried to drug her with something after they abducted her, or whatever. Like, the autopsy report's going to tell a lot of stuff. None of those details are even available in this case. Good luck finding any of that. I couldn't find anything that was released or any public statement that was made by the medical examiner there in Anchorage regarding her autopsy. Nothing.
Right.
So it's going to be real interesting. I'm going to be filing the Freedom of Information Act request to that county's medical examiner, their health department, to see if I can obtain her autopsy report.
Plenty. I'm really looking forward to that.
I wouldn't be surprised for them to come back and tell me there isn't one.
Yeah.
That would be terrible, because I also want to know, did she have skin cells under her fingernails? There are a lot of different ways that she could have biological evidence on her.
Yeah. Did they even know about the fingernail thing back in 71? I don't know of cases that old where that was nowadays, obviously, that's a routine practice. But and even in the 80s, that was a routine practice. But in 71, I don't know. Were they routinely looking for that?
Before my time, but I feel like some police departments were savvy enough to collect it and save it in the hopes that they could match it someday.
Probably not Anchorage, though.
Well, and that would be a really interesting thing, too, is how much did they save and what did they save and what do they still have?
Right. 50, that's what I'd
51
like to know.
Years later, because there are, like, the Alphabet murders, they still have everything. They didn't get rid. Again, we're talking Rochester, New York versus Anchorage, Alaska. But they saved everything on the deaths of those three little girls.
Right. There are lots of cold cases around the country that are being solved now from this time period.
Right. Right. Which is, that's what's going to make it an even bigger travesty is, did you folks at least have the foresight to save the stuff? Even if you didn't test it, and even if you didn't any of that, at least save it.
Back after this.
I can't believe the price of dog food is getting outrageous. And if I want to save a few bucks, I have to carry a 50-pound bag of kibble up the stairs into my apartment. There has to be a better way.
There is. I'm so glad you said something. You poor thing, we've been using TummyTimePetSupplies.com for over a year now.
Tummy Time Pet Supplies? What's that?
TummyTimePetSupplies.com. They have all the major brands and most smaller brands as well. In fact, we not only get all of our dog and cat supplies there, but they also have everything we need for Brett's chinchilla, Ashley's ferrets, Haley's iguana, and even Jordan's pet tarantula.
Wow, they sell all that?
And more. But what's best about TummyTimePetSupplies.com is that they ship everything through Amazon Fulfillment. That means that everything you order gets delivered right to your door, and if you're an Amazon Prime customer, shipping is almost always free.
That really sounds incredible, but I bet it's super expensive. Mark just got laid off and I can't afford all those special conveniences for a while. Nonsense. In fact, Tummy Time offers some of the most reasonable prices anywhere. You really have to be a whiz and coupon shopping to beat their everyday prices, and when they run sales, forget about it. I can't believe it, an incredible selection, great prices, and right to your door service. So what do you think?
I think the next time I buy anything for my pets, I'm going to TummyTimePetSupplies.com.
I think that's a very wise choice.
Me too.
That's right. For all your pet needs, it's TummyTimePetSupplies.com. Remember TummyTimePetSupplies.com.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for another fantastic episode of the Veritas 7 for all of us. I want to thank you for tuning in to this and all of our future and past episodes. Again, don't forget to please rate the show, like it, subscribe to it, so that you will get all of the updates and be the first to know as soon as we have new content that is published, which is just about every day. So definitely want to subscribe if you like the show. And please, please rate us so that that actually makes a big deal as far as our metrics go. So we would really appreciate it if you like the show, that if you would rate us on whatever platform you listen to the show, we would greatly appreciate that. It helps a lot. Again, for all of us here at the Veritas 7, thank you for tuning in. You have a great night. God bless. We'll talk to you soon. So turn the car around and leave. Meet me underneath the tree inside the valley that we made. And with our hands we'll make the best of the life that we have left. And we will never say goodbye. Inside the valley that we made. And with our hands we'll make the best of the life that we have left. And we will never say goodbye. And if we do we'll meet again, knowing love was heaven sent. And I've never felt this way.